Certainly.
But I say that this is an impossibility. Here is one point about which we are at issue. Very good. And do you mean to say also that, if he meets with retribution and punishment, he will still be happy?
Certainly not. In that case he will be most miserable.
On the other hand, if the unjust be not punished, then, according to you, he will be happy.
Yes.
But in my opinion, Polus, the unjust or doer of unjust actions is miserable in any case. More miserable, however, if he be not punished, and does not meet with retribution, and less miserable, if he be punished, and meets with retribution at the hands of gods and men.
You are maintaining a strange doctrine, Socrates.
I shall try to make you agree with me, O my friend, for as a friend I regard you. Then these other points at issue between us, are they not? I was saying, that to do, is worse than to suffer injustice.
Exactly so.
And you said the opposite.
Yes.
I said also, that the wicked are miserable, and you refuted me.
By Zeus I did.
In your own opinion, Polus? Yes, and I rather suspect, that I was in the right. You further said, that the wrongdoer is happy, if he be unpunished.
Certainly.
And I affirm, that he is most miserable, and that those who are punished are less miserable. Are you going to refute this proposition also?
A proposition which is harder of refutation, and the other, Socrates.
Say rather, Polus, impossible, for who can refute the truth?
What do you mean, if a man is detected in an unjust attempt to make himself a tyrant, and when detected is racked, mutilated, has his eyes burned out, and after having had all sorts of great injuries inflicted on him, and having seen his wife and children suffer the like, is at last impaled or tarred and burned alive, will he be happier than if he escape, and become a tyrant, and continue all through life doing what he likes, and holding the reins of government? The envy and admiration both of citizens and strangers, L.S., that the paradox which, as you say, cannot be refuted.
There again, noble Polus, you are raising hobgoblins instead of refuting me. Just now you were calling witnesses against me, but please to refresh my memory a little. Did you say, in an unjust attempt, to make himself a tyrant?
Yes, I did.
Then I say that neither of them will be happier than the other. Neither he who unjustly acquires a tyranny, nor he who suffers in the attempt, for of two miserables one cannot be the happier, but that he who escapes and becomes a tyrant is the more miserable of the two. Do you laugh, Polus? Well, this is a new kind of refutation, when anyone says anything, instead of refuting him to laugh at him.
But do you not think, Socrates, that you have been sufficiently refuted, when you say that which no human being will allow? Ask the company.
Oh, Polus, I am not a public man. And only last year, when my tribe were serving as Pritons, and it became my duty as their president to take the votes, there was a laugh at me, because I was unable to take them, and as I failed then, you must not ask me to count the suffrages of the company now. But if, as I was saying, you have no better argument than numbers, let me have a turn, and do make trial of the sort of proof which, as I think, is required, for I shall produce one witness only of the truth of my words. And he is the person with whom I am arguing. His suffrage I know how to take, but with the many I have nothing to do, and do not even address myself to them. May I ask then, whether you will answer in turn, and have your words put to the proof, for I certainly think, that I and you and every man do really believe, that to do, is a greater evil than to suffer injustice, and not to be punished than to be punished.
And I should say, neither I, nor any man, would you yourself, for example, suffer rather than do injustice?
Yes, and you too, I or any man would.
Quite the reverse, neither you, nor L, nor any man.
But will you answer?
To be sure, I will, for I am curious to hear what you can have to say.
Tell me, then, and you will know, and let us suppose, the term beginning at the beginning, which of the two, Polus, in your opinion, is the worst, to do injustice or to suffer?
I should say that suffering was worst.
And which is the greater disgrace? Answer.
To do.
And the greater disgrace is the greater evil?
Certainly not.
I understand you to say, if I am not mistaken, that the honorable is not the same as the good, or the disgraceful as the evil?
Certainly not.
Let me ask a question of you. When you speak of beautiful things, such as bodies, colors, figures, sounds, institutions, do you not call them beautiful in reference to some standard? Bodies, for example, are beautiful in proportion as they are useful, or as the sight of them gives pleasure to the spectators. Can you give any other account of personal beauty?
I cannot.
And you would say of figures or colors generally, that they were beautiful, either by reason of the pleasure which they give, or of their use, or of both?
Yes, I should.
And you would call sounds and music beautiful for the same reason?
I should.
Laws and institutions also have no beauty in them except in so far as they are useful or pleasant or both.
I think not.
And may not the same be said of the beauty of knowledge?
To be sure, Socrates, and I very much approve of your measuring beauty by the standard of pleasure and utility.
And deformity or disgrace may be equally measured by the opposite standard of pain and evil?
Certainly.
Then when of two beautiful things one exceeds in beauty, the measure of the excess is to be taken in one or both of these, that is to say, in pleasure or utility or both.
Very true.
And of two deformed things, that which exceeds in deformity or disgrace exceeds either in pain or evil, must it not be so?
Yes.
But then again, what was the observation which you just now made about doing and suffering wrong? Did you not say that suffering wrong was more evil, and doing wrong more disgraceful?
I did.
Then, if doing wrong is more disgraceful than suffering, the more disgraceful must be more painful, and must exceed in pain, or in evil or both. Does not that also follow?
Of course.
First, then, let us consider whether the doing of injustice exceeds the suffering in the consequent pain. Do the injurers suffer more than the injured?
No, Socrates, certainly not.
Then they do not exceed in pain?
No.
But if not in pain, then not in both?
Certainly not.
Then they can only exceed in the other?
Yes.
That is to say, in evil?
True.
Then doing injustice will have an excess of evil, and will therefore be a greater evil than suffering injustice?
Clearly.
But have not you and the world already agreed that to do injustice is more disgraceful than to suffer?
Yes.
And that is now discovered to be more evil?
True.
And would you prefer a greater evil, or a greater dishonor to a less one? Answer, Polus, and fear not, for you will come to no harm, if you nobly resign yourself into the healing hand of the argument, as to a physician without shrinking, and either say yes or no to me.
I should say no.
Would any other man prefer a greater to a less evil?
No, not according to this way of putting the case, Socrates.
Then I said truly, Polus, that neither you, nor I, nor any man, would rather do than suffer injustice, for to do injustice is the greater evil of the two.
That is the conclusion.
You see, Polus, when you compare the two kinds of refutations, how unlike they are, all men, with the exception of myself, are of your way of thinking, but your single assent and witness are enough for me. I have no need of any other. I take your suffrage, and am regardless of the rest. Enough of this. And now let us proceed to the next question, which is, whether the greatest of evils to a guilty man is to suffer punishment, as you supposed, or whether to escape punishment is not a greater evil, as I supposed. Consider, you would say that to suffer punishment is another name for being justly corrected when you do wrong.
I should.
And would you not allow that all just things are honorable in so far as they are just? Please to reflect, and tell me your opinion.
Yes, Socrates, I think that they are.
Consider again, where there is an agent, must there not also be a patient?
I should say so.
And will not the patient suffer that which the agent does, and will not the suffering have the quality of the action? I mean, for example, that if a man strikes, there must be something which is stricken.
Yes.
And if the striker strikes violently or quickly, that which is struck will be struck violently or quickly.
True.
And the suffering to him who is stricken is of the same nature as the act of him who strikes.
Yes.
And if a man burns, there is something which is burned.
Certainly.
And if he burns in excess also, as to cause pain, the thing burned will be burned in the same way.
Truly.
And if he cuts, the same argument holds, there will be something cut.
Yes.
And if the cutting be great, or deep, or such as will cause pain, the cut will be of the same nature.
That is evident.
Then you would agree generally to the universal proposition which I was just now asserting, that the affection of the patient answers to the act of the agent.
I agree.
Then, as this is admitted, let me ask, whether being punished is suffering or acting?
Suffering. Socrates, there can be no doubt of that.
And suffering implies an agent.
Certainly, Socrates, and he is the punisher.
And he who punishes rightly, punishes justly.
Yes.
And therefore he acts justly.
Justly.
Then he who is punished and suffers retribution, suffers justly.
That is evident.
And that which is just has been admitted to be honorable.
Certainly.
Then the punisher does what is honorable, and the punished suffers what is honorable.
True.
And if what is honorable, then what is good? For the honorable is either pleasant or useful.
Certainly.
Then he who is punished suffers what is good.
That is true.
Then he is benefited.
Yes.
Do I understand you to mean what I mean by the term benefited? I mean, that if he be justly punished, his soul is improved.
Surely.
Then he who is punished is delivered from the evil of his soul?
Yes.
And is he not then delivered from the greatest evil? Look at the matter in this way, in respect of a man's estate, do you see any greater evil than poverty?
There is no greater evil.
Again, in a man's bodily frame, you would say, that the evil is weakness and disease and deformity. I should. And do you not imagine, that the soul likewise has some evil of her own?
Of course.
And this you would call injustice and ignorance and cowardice, and the like?
Certainly.
So then, in mind, body, and estate, which are three, you have pointed out three corresponding evils, injustice, disease, poverty.
True.
And which of the evils is the most disgraceful, is not the most disgraceful of them injustice, and in general the evil of the soul?
By far the most.
And if the most disgraceful, then also the worst. What do you mean, Socrates? I mean to say, that what is most disgraceful has been already admitted to be most painful or hurtful, or both.
Certainly.
And now injustice and all evil in the soul, has been admitted by us to be most disgraceful?
It has been admitted.
And most disgraceful either, because most painful and causing excessive pain, or most hurtful, or both.
Certainly.
And therefore to be unjust and intemperate, and cowardly and ignorant, is more painful than to be poor and sick.
Nay, Socrates, the painfulness does not appear to me to follow from your premises.
Then, if, as you would argue, not more painful, the evil of the soul is of all evils the most disgraceful, and the excess of disgrace must be caused by some preternatural greatness, or extraordinary hurtfulness of the evil.
Clearly.
And that which exceeds most in hurtfulness will be the greatest of evils.
Yes.
Then injustice and intemperance, and in general the depravity of the soul, are the greatest of evils.
That is evident.
Now, what art is there which delivers us from poverty? Does not the art of making money?
Yes.
And what art frees us from disease? Does not the art of medicine?
Very true.
And what from vice and injustice? If you are not able to answer at once, ask yourself whither we go with the sick, and to whom we take them.
To the physicians, Socrates.
And to whom do we go with the unjust and intemperate?
To the judges, do you mean?
Comma, who are to punish them.
Yes.
And do not those who rightly punish others, punish them in accordance with a certain rule of justice? Ill, clearly. Then the art of money-making frees a man from poverty, medicine from disease, and justice from intemperance and injustice.
That is evident.
Which, then, is the best of these three?
Will you enumerate them?
Money-making, medicine, and justice.
Justice, Socrates, far excels the two others.
And justice, if the best, gives the greatest pleasure or advantage or both.
Yes.
But is the being healed a pleasant thing, and are those who are being healed pleased?
I think not.
A useful thing, then?
Yes.
Yes, because the patient is delivered from a great evil, and this is the advantage of enduring the pain, that you get well.
Certainly.
And would he be the happier man in his bodily condition, who is healed, or who never was out of health?
Clearly he who was never out of health.
Yes, for happiness surely does not consist in being delivered from evils, but in never having had them.
True.
And suppose the case of two persons who have some evil in their bodies, and that one of them is healed and delivered from evil, and another is not healed, but retains the evil, which of them is the most miserable?
Clearly he who is not healed.
And was not punishment said by us to be a deliverance from the greatest of evils, which is vice?
True.
And justice punishes us, and makes us more just, and is the medicine of our vice.
True.
He, then, has the first place in the scale of happiness who has never had vice in his soul, for this has been shown to be the greatest of evils.
Clearly.
And he has the second place, who is delivered from vice.
True.
That is to say, he who receives admonition and rebuke and punishment.
Yes.
Then he lives worst, who, having been unjust, has no deliverance from injustice.
Certainly.